Welcome to today's episode, where we tackle some tough topics related to loss and resilience. If discussions about death are sensitive to you, feel free to skip this one. Hello, I'm Emily Bellet, founder of Vestpod and author of You're Not Broke, You're Pre-Rich, and you're listening to The Wallet. Every week, we give you the best tips, guidance, and a good dose of inspiration and motivation to manage your money better. In this episode, we are joined by Celina Flavius, the powerhouse behind Blagger Finance. Celina shares her personal journey of unexpected loss in early 2022, when her fiancé passed away suddenly after his father's funeral. From abruptly shifting wedding plans to not even being welcomed to his funeral and navigating the aftermath, Celina graciously shares her story of loss and recovery. Join us as we explore how she found purpose after her loss and the profound impact it had on her financial values and priorities. Remember that we are not certified financial advisors. Information shared in this podcast is for educational purposes only and does not constitute financial advice. PensionBee is on a mission to help pension savers across the UK. Each month, their Pension Confident podcast helps listeners understand the world of personal finance, exploring pensions, ISAs, mortgages, and more. Host Philippa Lamb is joined by a panel of expert guests who answer questions from can you afford to have kids? To should you invest in a pension or an ISA? The Pension Confident podcast is available right now wherever you get your podcasts. Just remember that anything discussed should not be regarded as financial advice. Today, we're here to talk about a subject that may be a little bit difficult for you, Celina, to talk about and for anyone listening. But I wanted to talk about something really hard that happened to you. If you could just start on telling us a little bit the story or what you're able to share, and then we'll go into, you know, maybe the impact on your life and finances and stuff like that.
Yeah, so we were cohabiting, but we weren't engaged. We were due to be married in like 2020, but then COVID happened and it was we made a decision to delay the wedding, and then we had a new date in 2021, and again there were some restrictions still in place for our wedding date, so again we made a decision to delay. And I then, you know, we had a new date in 2022 and my partner passed away quite suddenly 6 months before we were due to be married. So we were due to be married in the July and he passed away under quite difficult circumstances in the January, so the end of January, 26th of January 2022. And my partner had a very difficult relationship with his family. My partner had lost his dad a month before. So there was already, he was dealing with a lot, you know, dealing with his own grief and bereavement from losing his dad. He actually passed away on the same day that he buried his dad.
I wanted to know a little bit about what happened, like, you know, straight after maybe your partner passing. You know, how did this unexpected situation impacted your, you know, your plans, your life, of course, your financial lives also, and maybe the first challenges you had to face, if there's anything that, you know, you think could help other people.
The next day, for example, I had to notify his next of kin. And one of the first questions that his next of kin had for me was, you know, did you get married? At that stage, they had been estranged from each other. They weren't on speaking terms. And they wanted to find out very, very quickly whether or not we had gotten married. And we hadn't. My partner and I had been living together in his house. Just some background on me. I was on the property ladder. I had my own house. When I met my partner, I ended up becoming like an accidental landlord. And then I moved in with him in his house, which he, you know, he actually owned the house with his ex-wife. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there's an ex-wife. There's an estranged next of kin. This is why I give you a bit of context, because it's all going to sound a bit wild. So the ex-wife who he had this joint property with, owned, you know, in common with. So immediately he passed away, and that house, as soon as the bank was informed, that house straight away went to his ex-wife, and she's responsible for the mortgage and all of that kind of stuff. And then informed his next of kin, and like I say, they asked me, did you guys get married? No. And then we had a very simple conversation. We'll work together. We'll plan my partner's burial. you know, give him the send-off that he deserves and all of that kind of nice conversation. So my partner died on a Wednesday and this conversation probably happened on the Thursday. Additional layer, my partner, when he passed away, his death was investigated by the coroner for a number of different reasons. And it just meant that it was a bit of a longer process. You know, when my partner's father had died, he may have passed away, I think on the weekend, on the Friday, and by the Monday, his body had been released to the funeral directors to arrange the burial and all of that kind of stuff. So very quick with my partner, it was a longer process. It probably took about 7 weeks.
Wow.
In that time, also speaking to the coroner. So that after my partner died, immediately kind of spoke to police and then had a conversation with the coroner, introduced myself to the coroner. When I tried to speak to the coroner for an update, I was told, actually, you know, I've been told not to speak to you. You're not the next of kin. I've not been given permission to speak to you. So, and like I said, we had been planning to be married. We had the venue booked. All the invites had been sent out. The deposit was paid. A lot of the time people kept on saying to me, you know, but you're his common law wife. But in England, it's not a thing. So if you are currently cohabiting and you hear all the time, oh, you're a common law husband or wife or partner, it doesn't exist. So I had to go through a process whereby I was being blocked from speaking to the coroner. So I had to kind of prove that we were a couple and we were together. And I did it by, you know, obviously, I literally showed them engagement pictures, basically, of me and my partner. And then also in a bit of a quirk, you know, quite quickly with my partner's next of kin, it kind of became very strange straight away. They were demanding access to the home that I lived in, where we'd lived in together. And I just said, you know, I need a few days, like literally he's just passed. I do need a few days. And then immediately I got like a letter, solicitor's letter, kind of demanding access. So I actually used that letter to send to the coroner because it literally said in that letter, you know, you're Selena, you this was your partner, you live in this property, we need to get access. So I again sent that across. So like I said, I gave you all that context just to say, I hope people don't have to go through this and have to deal with, you know, quite complicated family dynamics and relationships, because it did make an already difficult situation quite tough. So immediately blocked from speaking to the coroner, had to prove and then got to speak to the coroner in the end. And then also the added layer of, I now receive an email from an ex-wife who says, look, you know, I understand that this happened to your partner. I'm really sorry to have to contact you, but, you know, the house is now in my name. You know, we need to arrange something. And I'd never spoken to this ex-wife at all. And my partner barely spoke about that relationship. You know, I don't know how it ended. I don't know any of the details, but I just knew that I was now being approached by ex-wife on one hand and then also an estranged next of kin on the other hand. Ex-wife was lovely, I should say that. Be very clear about that. They were lovely. Next of kin, strained relationship with my late partner. So it was just strained between myself and them quite quickly. I should also say I spoke to a solicitor, but it was very difficult to speak to a solicitor. And that was because my partner and I, we didn't have any children together. I wasn't dependent on him when we met. I was working, you know, like I said, I had my own house, like, you know, my own savings, pensions and things like that. We hadn't combined things. It was something, in my mind, it was something that we were due to do once we'd been married. So like I say, I have a partner, ex-wife, estranged next of kin. My partner also didn't have a will, didn't have life insurance. I think he had a pension with one company. But all of those traditional things that you might have in place if you're kind of a married couple, and if you don't, you should think about these things. I know that if you are cohabiting now, only this year, if you are cohabiting now and you've got a child together or may have had a child when your partner had passed away or receiving income protection, there is a bereavement support payment that you can get. But that's something that's been introduced this year. And also the time limit for when you can claim that, I think it ends in February. So if any of you are cohabiting, you've got children, you've lost a partner, do look into bereavement support payment. The only kind of legal advice I was able to get was through a friend who knew a solicitor. So they introduced me to that solicitor, and the solicitor basically said to me, "Selena, you know, sit tight until we establish, you know, what's going on with his affairs, you know, who the house is, who the house belongs to, you know, who the next of kin will be and all of that kind of stuff." So that's essentially what I did until I was ready to actually move out of the property. All of the other stuff, obviously the relationship with myself and the next of kin was very strained. So it did mean that, unfortunately, they decided that I was to be disinvited to from my partner's funeral. I was getting lots of legal letters, like I say, demanding access to the house I lived in. And then also outside of that, I was also getting other letters, you know, really horrible emails. You know, it's very clear that this person decided that they didn't like me, basically. And then in the end, it was like, you know, you're not to be invited to the funeral. And I had honestly just resigned myself to, that's fine, I will just arrange something myself for him, arrange a celebration of life. And that's what I did end up doing. But in terms of his kind of sending off that he got, he basically got buried in secret. So I wasn't told, his best friends weren't told, the rest of his family weren't told where he was, you know, to be buried, when it was happening and whatnot. You know, that person who was his next of kin, who was estranged from him, basically swooped in and just decided that they just wanted to do their own thing. And like I said, I had resigned myself to that being the case. And the only way that I was able to know where he actually was buried was through the coroner. So the coroner was able to tell me who the funeral directors was, and then maybe a few days after he had been buried, my dad called them and was like, "I want to send some flowers," and they gave him the name of the cemetery, and immediately went there and then started to plan our own kind of send-off and funeral for him with his friends. I essentially had to use money that I was saving for our wedding. And in terms of his home, I was able to sort that out with his ex-wife. And I moved in with my sister temporarily. I still have my home. I still have, you know, everything that I kind of essentially brought into that relationship. But I mean, I did essentially end up walking away from that with just what I had.
Are there any specific financial decisions or anything that people could do to prepare for the, you know, for the unexpected? And I know it's very hard to even think about that.
Yeah, I think in hindsight, and there's a lot that I would probably do, lots of conversations I would probably have with my late partner, you know, in hindsight. There was a lot of things that he kept close to his chest, I will say, in terms of his kind of financial setup. And I think because I had my own things coming into that relationship, I maybe didn't question so much because we hadn't yet decided to combine things. Like I hadn't decided, okay, I'm now with you, I'm going to sell up my home and, you know, cash out things, and we're going to have joint bank accounts and things like that. And I mean, it swings and roundabouts. One of the immediate things that happened was that my partner's next of kin accessed the content of his bank account. And because it was separate, it didn't impact me. At the same time, you know, you could look at that in the reverse and say, look, if you guys had joint bank account, that wouldn't have happened, or that wouldn't have been able to have happened. But at the same time, I feel like the kind of, probably like the battle that I probably would have had to go through from a kind of financial perspective, I imagine that if we were tied, like if we had owned our house together, or if we had owned, you know, bank accounts together, I probably would have been dragged through the courts to gain access to all of that stuff, which you can argue, you know, if someone's next of kin, they have a right to some of that stuff, which they do. But I think I was insulated because we had things quite separate. And it just meant that I had things that I could fall back on when the unexpected had happened. So some lessons, like, and again, I think it's a massive message to those who are cohabiting, which is a large, a large percentage of the UK population who are cohabiting, that if you are, you know, cohabiting with a partner, just understand what that means should something happen to either of you. Having that independence, or having that emergency fund put aside, you know, having things in place such as life insurance. You know, life insurance can be used to do things such as, you know, if you're left with, you know, a mortgage, you know, pay for the mortgage. If you have childcare costs, pay for childcare costs. Having a will, it sets out, you know, your wants and your needs. Should something happen to you, who inherits what, who gets disinherited? Having a will in place is super important as well, just as an individual. Having those insurance policies in place, whether it's, you know, life insurance or income protection. You know, there were periods of time where, you know, my partner had time out of work due to illness. And then also just having really frank conversations with your partner around, okay, you know, you've got this house. Is it in your name? Is it in someone else's name? Did you buy it with somebody else? Just so that you know, and you're not kind of blindsided. I think some of the times, you know, ultimately, what happens when someone passes away, there will be people going through your stuff, going through to figure out what's going on with you. So having your ducks in a row is probably, you know, the best thing that you can do. And your significant other, letting them know exactly what you would want and putting things in place so that they can carry out that stuff for you, is probably essential. You know, my partner didn't have anything in place. I feel like he felt like he was going to live forever. Like, it just wasn't one of those things. It was very happy-go-lucky, very young at heart. We were due to be married. You know, we had plans. We had future plans.
Can I ask you, how did you find meaning or purpose in life after your loss? And how did that influence maybe your, you know, values or priorities?
So it's definitely one of the most difficult things I've ever been through in my life. I had lots of support. I will say that, you know, my late partner, he had loads of friends, and they had become my friends. We were together for 10 years, you know, they had become my friends. And due to the nature of his passing, I will say that they were immediately there. So, you know, at the end of the night where my partner had passed away, I was reaching out to those people who were at his dad's funeral to say, look, this is what's going on. And they immediately came to the hospital. And then my family as well, they were immediately at the hospital there supporting me, saying their goodbyes to my late partner as well. So my late partner was surrounded by love, you know, on the day that he passed, which brought me a lot of solace. And then also in terms of the support for me, I had lots of family support. For example, we did some, you know, in the Caribbean community, you do like a 9-night. So a few days after he passed, again, you kind of open up the house and all friends and family gather. And there was a moment where I broke down in tears, and literally my brothers, sisters, my mum and my dad, they literally just like cocooned me. I started crying. They cocooned me and like ushered me out of the room. So that's the kind of support that I had, like, immediately, which definitely helped. Purpose, I think it took a while. I had, by just some fluke of luck, the business was still able to continue. And that was because like a month before he had passed, I'd recruited some staff. Although they were very new, they were really like, okay, you know, what can I do? Can I help? Can I do a little bit extra? If it wasn't for them, I don't think the business would still be here. It would be here, but in a very pared down way. So that was something that, you know, I didn't plan for, but there's something that just was very fortunate. Another thing was, I was actually on ITV maybe a few months after my partner passed away. And at the time when that opportunity came about, which I wasn't expecting, I'd been at my sister's house and I told myself, I'm just going to have this day off. I'm not going to look at my emails. I'm just going to just relax, get out of London and just be at my sister's. And then I got this email opportunity to be on ITV, and I did a quick Zoom interview and then was offered that. And at the time, it really felt like, it felt like something really biblical, if that makes sense. It felt like to me that God was conspiring, and also my late partner was working together to give me this, this crazy opportunity at a point where I was very, very low and very like, you know, what do I do now? But that gave me a purpose. You know, that opportunity did give me purpose. It gave me a reason to get up in the morning. And also I did get bereavement counseling straight away. I got, I joined a support group straight away. There's a support group or charity called Widowed and Young, which is a peer-to-peer support group. It's a charity for people who have lost their partners below the age of 51. So you can all join. And I joined that immediately as well. So I think in the midst of everything that was happening, Black Girl Finance, the business, was still my purpose. There were moments where I had to take time away from it. You know, there's moments where, you know, to send an email would take all day. Send one email would take all day. Your, is it cognitive, not cognitive function, what's that, what's that part of the brain responsible for all of those things that you do? And that part is just completely shattered. So there were moments in between all of this, in between planning his, you know, celebration of life that we gave him and doing ITV and working, there were moments where I was just like flat on my back on the sofa, doing nothing because I couldn't really function. Talking about what's happened is again purpose. It's in a different way.
Thank you, Selina. And do you have any final tip? You mentioned a lot of community resources organization, but maybe anything that could be helpful to anyone in your situation.
The biggest thing that I did, and it's just the way that my brain works, and everyone grieves differently. Like I said, I'm part of the Widowed and Young community, and you know, everyone experiences this thing really differently. For me, I wanted to be really clued up about, okay, what am I going to go through? What's going to happen? So I read books around bereavement. I probably listened to podcasts about bereavement. I joined communities about bereavement, and I made sure that I got myself bereavement counselling straight away through a charity called Cruise Bereavement. And I leaned on a lot of people. It's a really hard conversation to have, you know, when you're kind of going back out into the world and, you know, someone may say to you, you know, how are you? What's been happening? And to tell someone, look, I've lost my body. It can be really awkward, but, you know, quite honestly, I found that people, once they get over that initial kind of shock of what you're saying to them, you know, they're really lovely.
Thank you for listening. And if you want to learn more about financial advice, how to prepare for death, or how to talk to your partner about money, listen to our mini-series, Road to Wealth, linked in the episode description. See you again next Thursday.